Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning. This is NPR News. I'm Janice Schwartle, filling in this morning for Carrie Miller. We'll be in-depth this hour on investigations into Russia's meddling in the 2016 U.S. elections. But first, to both domestic and international politics. It's Monday morning, so that means it's time for the political junkie, Ken Rudin, to join us. Welcome, Ken.
Bonsoir.
That's very clever. I don't speak any French, so I'm going to give you all of that. Oh, come on. You just did it.
I don't even need French toast, but I do after this weekend. My goodness, I could not take my eyes off the results going on in that French election.
All right, we're going to get to the French election in just a minute, Ken, but let's talk healthcare. When you and I spoke last Monday, we were talking about the bill didn't need to be rushed, no need to get crazy here, and now all of a sudden, by Friday, we have a vote. It's going to go to the Senate next, so what can we expect? Kind of recap this whole healthcare thing, if you can.
Well, you know something? There was no deadline. It didn't have to pass. But I got the sense, given the fact that how few number of Republicans actually read the bill, it does seem like that the Republicans, or at least the Republican leadership and the White House itself, were more excited about the fact that they passed something rather than what was in it. Because according to almost everything I've read, unless you're reading something from the House Freedom Caucus, it is a far more draconian measure than the one that was rejected back in March when they couldn't even bring it up for a vote because they didn't have the votes. They did make enough changes to get the support. Paul Ryan and the Republicans made enough changes to get the support of the House Freedom Caucus. But by doing so, it alarmed certainly all the Democrats and many moderate centrist Republicans, whatever that means anymore. And 20 Republicans voted no. Had there been 22 Republicans voting no, it would have been a 215 to 215 tie. It would have gone down to defeat. So they got it passed, and there was a big rally, a big, you know, let's pat ourselves on the back rally at the White House. And President Trump and Speaker Ryan and everybody was so excited. But the Senate, Democrats and Republicans, are not excited at all. It will go to the Senate now, and I assume that whatever the Senate does with it will look nothing like what it looks like now. And then, of course, it'll go back to the House for a conference committee. But it's a victory for Paul Ryan. He got the votes he wanted. He got it passed. But my goodness, it's not a popular bill, and I think the Senate is going to just rip it to pieces.
So was that enough for Speaker Ryan just to get the win? I mean, what's the thinking here if the Senate's going to totally rewrite this or come up with something completely new?
Well, you know something? I thought that back in March. I thought, look, just get it out of the House. Just pass it. Whatever it is, just pass it and let the more sober second thoughts in the Senate do some serious recalculation and working out to be more popular. But the fact is that they thought this was a great bill. And, you know, I mean, what it does, it's clearly from everything I've seen, it looks like there will be much higher premiums for older Americans, for sicker Americans. It eliminates the price protections for people who have pre-existing conditions, despite what the supporters of the bill says. So there are a lot of problems. And it also cuts billions of dollars from Medicaid. Now, not everybody likes Medicaid, but there are a lot of Republicans, including people like John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, other Republican governors, say that it's the only thing that makes people allows people to afford to pay for health insurance. So there's a lot of things that just, you know, just not there. But Ryan just wanted a victory, was desperate for a victory. Trump was complaining, not so quietly, that Ryan was not really that good of a deal maker. And we all know what a great deal maker President Trump is. And so just Ryan made sure it happened. There was some real heavy arm twisting at the end to get these two wavering Republicans. I guess it was Fred Upton of Michigan, and it was Billy Shore of Missouri who came on board, and that gave him the 217 to 213 victory. But you know, passing something and being happy with it are two completely different things.
Very true. All right, because it kept you awake all weekend and you were looking at the returns, let's talk about the French election. We'll get international here and talk about this. Yesterday, France held that election and 39-year-old Emmanuel Macron won. He defeated nationalist Marine Le Pen. Let's bring in Yuri Friedman. He's a staff writer for The Atlantic, where he's been covering this election. Welcome to you, Yuri. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on.
If you have questions about the French election, we also want to hear from you. What does this all mean? Maybe that's your question. Are you curious about the EU now? If you want to ask us a question, call us at 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Or if you'd like to use email, talk@mprnews.org. So let's talk a little bit about this French election. Ken, we'll start with you. President Trump expressed support for Le Pen in the past. But yesterday, he congratulated Macron and said he looked forward to working with him. So how do you think this relationship is going to work between Macron and Trump? And how will the U.S. and Europe's relationship look?
I was going to say, let's be very careful. I don't think Trump actually endorsed Le Pen, but he did say some kind things about her. And when there were terrorist acts in France, he said, oh, this could very well help Le Pen. And I think that's the reason why I don't remember in my lifetime, and I've been watching politics for a long time, I don't remember ever a French election that got so much interest in the United States and perhaps around the world too, but because of what happened with the British exit from European Union and with the Trump election, there are angry, resentful nationalist forces going around the world, and people wondered what kind of a support Le Pen would get. As it turned out, she got 34%, which is the most the National Front has ever gotten, but at the same time, it didn't come close to victory, and I'm not sure if it was a victory for Macron as it was for a defeat for Le Pen, but when you think of a relationship with Donald Trump. Look, we don't know. Donald Trump has spent more time attacking and making life miserable for our allies, as we've seen in Mexico and in Australia and Canada, and saying nice things about our adversaries. I mean, you know, not so much the president of North Korea, you know, the tough cookie, but also about Putin and things like that. So, look, Trump is very unpredictable when it comes to relationships with foreign leaders. But we'll see what happens with his relationship with the new the president-elect of France.
Yuri, we'll go to you. I was reading this morning in the New York Times, the write-up on this election was very blunt, saying it was globalism versus nationalism, the future versus the past. Pretty high-stakes stuff. So would you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I think these two candidates really did present starkly different visions, and I think people saw this as a referendum not just on the individual candidates themselves, but on France's role in Europe and the world. So Marine Le Pen, you know, she opposed the European Union, she opposed NATO. She had this vision of nationalism and even, you know, some might describe it as nativism, of shutting borders, of, you know, having national interests trump any kind of Europe-wide interests. And Emmanuel Macron was a real staunch defender of Europe and the European idea and the idea that the best way to bring peace and prosperity to a continent that, let's not forget, was racked by two world wars, is to have more integration. Now, Macron didn't do this in a kind of unqualified way. He did say the EU needs some reform. You know, if we're going to do cooperation, we need to really have strong integration where we help out fringe countries like Greece that aren't prospering as much as a country like Germany is. So it's not some kind of vision of, you know, Europe is amazing and we need to embrace it wholeheartedly. It was there are problems and need reform. But he presented a really different vision. And I think one place where I really saw that starkly illustrated, I don't know, you know, I'm sure a lot of people saw last night, yesterday, the rally where Macron gave a speech after winning in front of the Louvre. It was this giant crowd. And one line that really struck me was he said, "We are defending the spirit of the Enlightenment." That's a much bigger way to frame this election than just, you know, I have one policy vision versus another. He was saying that we believe in human progress, concepts of truth, concepts of common humanity. I think that he was trying to present a stark contrast with Marine Le Pen's voters. Now, I'm sure Marine Le Pen would disagree that they are against Enlightenment values, but she thinks that they are different Enlightenment values, like taking care of French people in a way that she feels they're not taken care of when France is integrated into the European Union. So I think these really were starkly different visions, and France spoke pretty decisively.
Yuri, in your most recent piece, you talked about the challenges that Macron faces. And last night when he spoke, he seemed to have he was pretty humble in his acceptance speech. His campaign slogan was "Together France," and you wrote his victory could further fracture French politics rather than bridge the country's political divisions. What did you mean by that specifically? What are you talking about there?
I think there's a, you know, if he won by with two-thirds of the vote. There's a way to interpret this that says, wow, France really came together. He brought in people from all different political stripes. That is one way to interpret this, but I don't think it's the only way, and I think it's too early to say that. And the reason I feel that way is Emmanuel Macron started a political movement a year ago. He is not part of any established political party. The main left and right-wing parties in France didn't make it to the second round of the election. This would kind of roughly be the equivalent of the Republican and Democratic parties not making it into past the primaries. And that is a real obliteration of French politics as they were usually practiced. We have a parliamentary election coming up in France in June. And the big test is that can Emmanuel Macron field candidates who win across the 577 seats in the lower house of parliament? If he can't, then that might mean he either has to form a coalition or that an opposition party may control the legislature. And in France, it's not exactly like our system. It's a kind of hybrid presidential and parliamentary system. And so if there is a different prime minister from a rival party controlling the legislature, Macron won't get anything passed. And if he has to form a coalition, he's going to have to rebuild support for every single one of his policies. And what this could fuel is, let's say he has trouble getting really ambitious reform legislation passed, French voters might only grow more disillusioned with politics. And right now, they actually register some of the highest forms of disillusionment, highest levels of disillusionment among any EU country. About 70% of French voters say they have no confidence in the government. And so my concern is that if he struggles to get his legislation passed because he has just formed this new political party, disillusionment with a reformer like him may only grow, and that might fuel more support for political extremes or protest votes.
That's a good point, and it's kind of something that one of our listeners is thinking about. When you talk about 70% of the French population just having no confidence in believing what its government can do, hence we've got this brand new party now leading the nation. Jerry in Stillwater, you were thinking a little bit about how Macron could govern, were you not? Can you ask your questions?
Yes, actually, kind of just covered a lot of it, but I was wondering what Macron would have to do to get his party, enough people of his party in, and whether there was much chance that he was able to do it. And I guess the other side of that is, are there nationalist people that are in there that'll fight him every step of the way?
Yuri, will it be just like the United States in that way?
Yeah, so what we're currently looking at is he has promised to field candidates in all of France's electoral districts, and he actually has a really interesting approach to this. He wants half of those candidates to not be from politics, to be from other parts of society. He wants equal gender breakdowns. So he has a kind of ambitious framing of how he wants these candidates to be fielded. Right now, polls suggest that his independent movement might actually be the largest party in the parliament. The question is whether it becomes a majority. But even if it's the largest party, that's quite an accomplishment for something that was started a year ago. Right now, Marine Le Pen's party is trying to set itself up as the main opposition party, but they might not have a huge presence in the legislature, certainly more than they have before, but not gigantic. So what my guess is what we're looking at is either he gets a majority, which would be really amazing and impressive, but would not be uncommon in French politics, where typically people who vote for the presidency want that presidency to be strong, and so they vote for his supporters to go into office in the legislature. They don't like divided government. So either he will manage to get a majority, or he'll come with a coalition, and he'll probably have some either center-left socialists or center-right Republicans as part of that coalition. The leaders of both parties endorsed him at the second stage of the campaign, so it's plausible that might happen.
Has he been able to grow this party in this short amount of time so that there are people that are going to run for office in the next few months in his party?
Yes, he has. He has really established a name for it. And, you know, one of the things is this was a pretty decisive victory. One French expert put it in a good way, I think. He said, the French are legitimists. They want, when they elect a president, they want that president to have support. They don't want him to struggle and not be able to pass any legislation. And so what typically happens is it's almost like a wave of popular support, and that wave continues to crest all the way to the parliamentary election when they want to vote in someone. They don't want a government that can't get anything done. My guess is he really does have a lot of support. He's a popular person right now. There may be a lot of Republican and socialist candidates who will run under a unified banner or actually switch allegiance to his party. So yes, I think his path is plausible. I just don't know if he is actually going to be able to get a majority. And even if he does get a majority, you have to remember, he's a centrist, right? So a lot of people with a lot of different views are going to fall under that umbrella. And it's hard to then say, we're going to pass very ambitious legislation to change French labor laws, to cut government spending, when you have people under a big tent that have very different views. So it's an eclectic group of candidates who might not all agree on the same pieces of major legislation.
Janet, can I jump in here?
I was just going to ask you to jump back in, Ken. You're reading my mind.
Well, now here's the thing, though. It's interesting. We're having this conversation, and it's a fascinating conversation how Macron will govern or try to govern. But we haven't really talked about what the National Front, Marine Le Pen's party, accomplished yesterday. The fact is, the party has a history of anti-Semitism, has a history of racism. It has a history of, you know, banishing immigrants and nostalgia for the Nazi past, the collaborationist past. And yet, it got 34% of the vote. Yes, it was a landslide defeat, but it was the largest amount that the National Front has ever gotten. I think we're dismissing the future of this party, and as Yuri points out correctly, that they could do sizably, fairly well in the June parliamentary elections. And another thing that interests me is that the far left in France, many of whom felt that, you know, there was no difference between the two parties, many of them supported Le Pen, or they just felt that there was no difference. But it was interesting, when you go so far to the right and so far to the left, you almost come together when you go around that circle. And there seems to be almost like an alliance. Like, I think that, yes, the headline says Le Pen lost in a landslide. Do I think that her influence is gone, the party's influence is gone, and the party is hurt for the June parliamentary elections? I say no.
Yuri, what do you make
of
that?
That's what I say.
I agree. I think this was a major progress for Le Pen's party. You know, the last time her party made it to the second round of elections was in 2002. Her father was the leader of the party at the time. He got half the vote that Marine Le Pen got. This was a big victory for her. You know, I think one way to think about this, if you squint really hard at that rally speech last night in Paris, you can kind of see Barack Obama in 2008, you know, speaking to a crowd after achieving a victory and being a centrist and bringing in together, being a sign of change and bringing together different constituencies. And 8 years later, we got a more nationalist candidate because people were frustrated. And some voters of Barack Obama then voted for Donald Trump. And people felt they were frustrated with the lack of progress that Obama had in office, or they expected more. The idea that this is a defeat for Marine Le Pen, that this is a high watermark, I think it's premature to say that. We don't know what Macron's presidency is going to bring, and we don't know what the reaction to that presidency will be. You know, France has five-year terms, and we have 5 years to see whether Marine Le Pen can actually achieve a greater victory. And we have parliamentary elections right now coming up where she still could get a sizable percentage and position herself as the main opposition party in the National Assembly.
Isn't it interesting that a country that was demanding change, it votes for basically an uninspiring candidate? Usually when you want change, you want some dramatic change. But Macron wasn't wasn't calling for anything dramatically different. He just was not Le Pen, and of course that benefited him in this election. But as Yuri's pointed out through this whole interview, you need more than just saying I'm not the bad guys to get anything accomplished.
Yuri, I have one last question for you about turnout. Were there a lot of folks there talking about, I don't like either one of them, so I'm not voting, which is something here in the U.S. we heard a lot of in last year's election?
Definitely. Turnout was a big story here. About 25% of the French electorate didn't turn out. That is one of the highest percentages ever in the Fifth Republic, which was established in 1958. The last time it was that low was 1969. Now, one thing to keep in mind is that's still pretty high. I mean, that's higher than a lot of U.S. elections, but this was on a weekend.
We would beg for that kind of turn.
Exactly. This would be wonderful, amazing news in the United States. But for France, everyone's lamenting it. And the reason why is, you know, this is weekend voting. There's just a tradition of really high turnout in French elections. The other thing that I thought was interesting was that about 9% of voters cast a blank ballot. So they actually went to the voting station but made a statement by not voting for anyone.
Wow.
And so I think what you can kind of glean from that is that this isn't some kind of like rosy story necessarily of everyone just saying these are great choices. Some people felt really disillusioned, felt they didn't have a voice in this, especially supporters of the far left candidate. And that those people aren't going to go away. They're going to continue to still be a force in French politics.
Can you imagine, Ken, 9% of Americans just turning in a protest ballot and not putting someone's name in with 74% turnout?
Well, you did see the highest number of third-party candidates in at least modern history, with the Libertarian and the Green Party getting percentages higher than they've ever gotten before. But I love listening to what Yuri's saying, that you know, 34% didn't vote or cast blank ballots. And we said, oh, my goodness, if we only had the kind of turnout we had like that we had here. And, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, with all those tensions, that populist anger, that the resentments that were still in France prior to yesterday, whether it goes away no matter what happened in yesterday's election.
All right, we're at Monday morning, Ken. What should most Americans take of these results? What should they be thinking about today when they look at who won?
Well, too many people are trying to equate Trump with Le Pen, and that's simplistic and it's dangerous. But they do know, they feel that moderation, that belief in government, belief in people, and abhorrence of the extremes won out yesterday in France. And so the headlines almost universally is very positive and very supportive.
Yuri, final thoughts?
I think one thing I'd stress to keep in mind is I think you're going to see a lot of stories today saying populism has faltered or it's fading or it's on the back foot. I think yes, this was a decisive victory, but populism is not only about winning and losing elections. It's about creating a disruptive force in politics. And, you know, if the French had an electoral college in one round instead of two rounds, this election might have looked very different. A lot depends on a political system. If you're a parliamentary election, it could be splintered. I think we really need to see she won 33% of the vote. Populism is a force. It's a force in Europe. It's a force in the United States. And we need to reckon with it, even if they're not the ones leading government.
I wanted to ask you about.
I was just going to say, and she also did not blame James Comey for her defeat.
True.
I just thought I'd mention that.
I just thought you'd throw that in there. I did want to ask one more question about what you just said. With Le Pen getting 33% there, did she have some ideas that Macron's going to have to address or think about as he moves forward?
Definitely. One is reforming the European Union. You know, how can we get the European Union to not only bring peace and prosperity to the continent, but specifically to the French? You know, how do you actually make it work for them so the people feel that it's benefiting them economically? French unemployment rate's at 10%. It's really high among the youth. So there's a real feeling that it's not benefiting them. I think he needs to find ways to reform that. And I think she has injected that into the conversation in a way that in the past, the European Union membership was taken for granted. It won't be anymore. And the second big thing is terrorism. We know that there have been a lot of attacks in Paris, in France in general. And I think he is going to have to find a way to show the French public that he is taking the threat seriously and trying to address it while still being open on migration, as he says he would be, and being more open on questions of like the wearing of the veil in France and other kind of social flashpoint issues. I think she successfully injected that into the conversation, and he is not that issue is going to be one of the top issues he'll have to address.
Great points and great conversation, gentlemen. Yuri Friedman, global affairs writer at The Atlantic, talking to us from D.C. Thanks so much for joining our conversation today.
Thanks for having me on.
And Ken Rudin, always on Monday mornings with his insight. Thank you so much, the political junkie from D.C. Thanks, guys.